Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.
Not in a Creepy Way. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is brother Jay.
And tonight we're going to go to the Wayback Machine and go to 1994. Stargate, written and directed by Roland Emmerich. Now, we know Roland Emmerich from Universal Soldier, Independence Day, Godzilla 98, The Day After Tomorrow, 10,000 BC, 2012, and White House Down. That's a lot of box office, a lot of spectacular. But, you know, I mean, we're not talking about, like, auteur kind of stuff.
Whose fault is this?
Is the fact we're watching it?
Yes.
Oh, my fault.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, here, guilty pleasure. I like this movie. So, Brother Jay?
I remember liking this movie, but after watching it last night, I did not like it.
Oh, let's talk that.
I don't know.
So you do not enjoy yourself?
I enjoyed the nostalgia part of it.
100%. Nostalgia is pulling a lot of weight here.
But the story falls apart and it's just so whipsawing that I had a hard time with the constant bipolarity of this movie.
How so?
It never knew what it was doing.
Like tonal shift between comedy and hardcore sci-fi?
It's a comedy. It's a horror movie. It's a sci-fi suspense movie. It keeps shifting back and forth. It doesn't stick with the theme. If you want to be foreboding and scary, be foreboding and scary. Be aliens. If you want to be a suspense movie, you know, be a good thriller. Fine, do that. You know, you want to be a good sci-fi movie? Fine, do that. But don't try all of them at the same time because what you end up doing is doing none of them well.
Ah, okay. Remind me, let's put a pin in aliens, because I think what you mean is if you want to be like a scary horror movie, you go with Alien.
Probably.
Aliens is a whole different movie.
I stand corrected because I actually haven't seen them. So I'm just going off of anecdotal information. But the premise is more important.
No, you're absolutely right. No, I don't want to diminish you from your whole concept there.
Also, this movie was ripped off of a lot of other movies.
Of course.
Like
this is a broad tropes that are coming together.
German archaeologists, really?
Well, I mean, German archaeologists, English archaeologists, there's only so many archaeologists, you know.
Yeah, but German archaeologists, you know, Indiana Jones.
Oh, I know. I understand.
There's so much that And then they have the suicidal, you know, I'm already spoiling it.
By the way, we're going to spoil the movie. The movie is like 105 years old. It deserves to be spoiled. And it's also a movie, arguably, I think it's like a popcorn kind of kids movie. Not little kids, but like teens.
And it spawned a whole shit ton of TV, by the way.
Oh, yeah. And is it good TV? I don't know.
It's okay TV. I mean, it's about what you would expect.
Yeah. Well, you know, and the universe itself, I think, is interesting if you look at like a bigger picture. But in this movie is kind of, you know, it's kind of just sketched, I think. Like, it's really beautifully, I guess, it's beautifully drawn in one sense, because there's a lot of practical effects. Yeah. On the other hand,
there's some problems. Oh, yeah, we have a suicidal military officer. oh, that's from Lethal Weapon almost. I mean, all of these things are just so cliche and stolen.
Well, yeah.
I think on my rewatch, that's what I struggled the most with, is that at the time I saw this, it never occurred to me, right, to be skeptical or even questioning of any of this. But then on an adult rewatch, I picked it apart because I was, this isn't good. This is just somebody else's stuff recycled.
Well,
not well.
Are we running into the problem of what 20 years from now when we do the podcast and we talk about when we talk about zombie movies and we're like, oh, I really liked 28 Days or I'm sorry, 28 Days Later. Yeah, because 28 Days is a whole different one. You know, I really liked great. Now I can't think of, like the show The Walking Dead or whatever, which turns out I don't. But anyway, but like 20 years from now, we'll see this whole bunch of zombie movies, this glut of zombie movies that we have now. And it's like, what, you know, it's all derivative. It's all bullshit. But I wonder if Stargate is suffering a little bit of post Star Wars kind of space opera kind of stuff.
I don't know. I don't remember. I don't remember enough about 94 to recall what was happening. I mean, I was working and it was shortly before my move. I moved to 96. So it would have been, I would have still been living with you. So
oh, yeah, this is a summer blockbuster, but you were not working at the theater anymore, right?
No, I would have been working at Fred's. And we did not. I mean, I don't think I saw this in movie theater.
I think I must have. But yeah, I don't know for sure.
I think the first time I saw this was like either on like cable TV when I'd moved, or I rented it and watched it like from a Hollywood Video in Portland. That's my memory.
I could see that too.
But I haven't seen it since until last night. Now I have seen a few episodes of the show, not on purpose, just incidentally. And they weren't terrible. I think they would have had more impact and probably gravity had I had some context and actually started the series. But do I have a desire to go and watch the series? This movie doesn't make me want to go and watch the series.
Oh, that's that's funny.
But the story, you're right. The story at the base of this is an interesting story, and I think could have been told better. And I think this was just a bad execution. It looked good. It had some good looks to it. It definitely had a very good atmosphere, if you will. Great colors, some great sets, great practical effects. I mean, all of that was there. The acting wasn't great. The dialogue wasn't great. And the plot was... I don't know where the plot was, because the plot was everywhere. It was all over the place.
I don't know. I see it as a much just simpler plot. It's just kind of paint by numbers. But, you know, that means we should probably get into the plot.
Sure.
So, 1994. We actually go back a little bit before that, but I'm going to still take the plot synopsis from IMDb, which is actually the same one. It was just cut and pasted on Wikipedia, I think. So, neither they're all both the same, so it doesn't really matter. But, more or less, this movie starts in 1994, where Egyptologist and linguist Daniel Jackson, James Spader. By the way, James Spader is from Avengers Age of Ultron, A Sex, Lies, and Videotape, 2 Days in the Valley, 1996's Crash, not the one we're going to talk to about with Shelley, Bad Influence, Wall Street, Mannequin, Pretty in Pink, and Less Than Zero. And more recently, what is he, Blacklisted?
The Blacklist?
The Blacklist, yeah, the TV show.
Yeah, that's where boyfriend Jesse knew him from.
Yeah. Well, again, this guy's been a weirdo from way back, but not a bad actor. Although, again, anyway, he is giving a lecture that no one is appreciating,
he sabotages the speech. He sabotages the whole thing because he doesn't have any nuance at all.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's not selling it very well.
No. He's not smooth. He's not a smooth operator.
No. So a lady named Catherine, played by Vivica Lindfors, who was Aunt Bedelia in Creepshow, and she was also in a movie. What the hell is going on?
That's not me.
That's my phone. I am declining a phone call.
Somebody important?
Holy of course, yeah, every time I do that, it's like, oh, hey, it's Dad. He says he's waiting for a helicopter.
Well, Dad's phone number would come up, though, hopefully.
Yeah, no, it would say.
Although they are at the cabin this weekend, I think.
Yeah, but it's not their number.
Well, that's reassuring. Thanks.
Now, hold on. Let me find out who it is.
You can look who it is.
Yeah. Oh, it's Walgreens. It's Walgreens telling me that Journey's medication's in. So that's fine. Okay.
Awesome. Also, why was French Stewart a choice in this?
Oh, we're going to get into that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
I mean, okay. Not deeply, but
I don't want to be deeply in French Stewart. So.
I don't know. French Stewart is pretty awesome, but yeah. So Daniel Jackson is invited by Catherine, played by Vivica Lindfors, who is Aunt Bedelia in Creepshow, and also starred in a movie which I knew you had a videotape copy of during a time that you didn't really have a lot of like store bought videotapes, and that's a movie called The Linguini Incident. Do you remember that?
No.
I know you had a copy of that movie. I've never watched it. Don't know anything about it, but I know that Vivica Lindfors is in it.
What? Are you sure that was me?
Positive.
I have never heard of this movie before.
The Linguini Incident.
I understand. Okay. I heard you. I understand that the anyway. Words that are coming out of your mouth.
Byron. Byron,
you know, I downloaded that for my phone. I think Jesse's ready to kill me.
It's the best / worst.
Oh, you know, I do got to go back.
You know, so the lady, the actress that plays that part, I can't remember her name, but she's great. She's great in that role, that which is really a one note, but it was a well played note. And
David Bowie?
Yeah, I watched her in Boo, Madea's Boo, a Halloween movie, and she plays a whole different, Boo 2, I think, maybe. And she plays a whole different kind of character, and unfortunately, I mean, she's really good, actually, but it's Tyler Perry is such a thing. We're going to have to talk to Shelley about Tyler Perry. Anyway.
Did you see the cast of this movie?
I've only seen it from the fact that you had the video that was like, I remember the cover of the videotape.
Unless
it has a really good soundtrack in which maybe you had the album, but I think it was the VHS.
I do not recall ever having seen this movie.
You were a big David Bowie fan at the time, though.
I was.
In the modern love era.
It came out in October of 91.
Okay.
The movie was also known as Shagorama. Wow, it's got an amazing cast. I really do not recall this movie at all. I might actually have to go and watch this.
If it's available somewhere, let me know.
I might just buy it. I mean the cast. I can't say her name.
Maura Tierney?
Yes.
I love her.
James Avery. Marley Matlin, Buck Henry, David Bowie, Rosanna Arquette. It's crazy. Was this a theatrical
It's like
release?
An ensemble?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. No, give us the elevator pitch.
Well, there's not a lot in there. So IMDb is not very populated. Let me see if I can get their synopsis.
You don't want the synopsis. You want just like the summary or whatever.
Two disgruntled restaurant employees, David Bowie and Rosanna Arquette, decide to rob their employers, Buck Henry and Andre Gregory.
Wow.
The tagline, he wants to be tied down, she wants to be tied up. It's not what you think. Oh, God. Oh, man.
Maybe Drew didn't have this movie. He'd been too young.
What are you basing too young on?
Well, I mean, 1991, he was like 14 or something.
Yeah, Rosanna Arquette.
I don't know.
Maura Tierney, I don't know.
Oh, no, Maura Tierney is great.
Quirky and delightful little comedy. That's what one of the user reviews said. Release date, da-da-da. There are no details. There's no...
And it's probably not available for streaming anywhere.
I will have to look. Now it has challenged me. Challenge accepted.
This could be a false memory. I don't know.
Well, no, you might remember that it may have ended up in a pile of things that I possessed, but to date, I've never.
Who knows? I mean, maybe it was something from a friend or whatever. I don't know.
It could have been.
Yeah.
I don't. What a straight. There's a. The trailer is 2 minutes long. Okay.
So somewhere Brady is like, "Damn it! That's where my VHS of like Houdini incident went."
It was also titled Houdini and Company.
I don't know. Don't know nothing.
Der Geist des Magiers.
By the way, you know what movie I got in the mail the other day?
Oh, dear.
Johnny Dangerously.
Wow.
And it is...
Michael Keaton?
Yep. And it is actually... At first, I thought, oh, this is really fun what they're doing. Because it's like a 30s like take on gangster stuff, except sort of absurdist, you know, almost like Mel Brooks kind of. It's a little dirty because at first I was going to say, Journey, yeah. We should watch this together.
I remember being really filthy.
Just like innuendo and stuff. But it's Griffin Dunne and it's amazing. It's really amazing. And all that crap, like the whole, like the bad guy who is, you know, he's like you ice hole and like,
yeah,
like you know, it's fucking war, and you know,
no
like
Fargan way,
you cork right. Soccer or something. Yeah, it's like yeah, no Fargan way, it's Fargan war. A lot of ice holes.
Why do I remember
and, like,
this?
Bastage.
I remember so much of this movie.
No, and then Joe Piscopo saying, like, don't question me. My mother questioned me once. By the way, and the best thing about Johnny Dangerously, so far, I'm not only like a third of the way through it, the theme song is and it's played in full, is a song by Weird Al that is fantastic. It's really great. What?
Of note, I can buy the main. Inexplicably, I could buy the 1992 Laserdisc version of the Linguini incident.
Nice.
Laserdisc.
Oh, is it out of print?
I don't know. So there is a DVD copy that I could buy for $9.99.
I don't know.
MP3. Why would I want MP3?
Let's
playback region 2.
Okay, that's not good.
Will not play on US.
Yeah.
I think I could play it on my Xbox, maybe.
There's a bunch of hoops you have to go through. It's not worth it. Unless you got a region-free DVD or Blu-ray player, it's not worth it.
I think my MacBook, I think I can cheat on my MacBook, but I don't know that it's worth it. There's an audio CD? This is confusing. Shagorama DVD. $192.
Well, that's the thing. It's got to be out of print, so anyway. Oh, well. So, Linguini incident. Parents, if you happen to be cleaning up the house anytime soon, open a box and you've got a VHS copy of the Linguini incident. I'd imagine all those VHSs are gone now. Nobody has a player anymore.
Well, you know, I was thinking about that the other day because I still have all of my. Completely off the rails.
That's fine. Who knows? Stargate.
I was discussing somebody, my music collection. I still have physical CDs.
Oh, me too.
And I don't need them.
Binders,
I don't need
like
them, but I don't want to get rid of them because they were a huge monetary investment. But I don't even know that I have a CD player that would play them at this point.
Well, so I have a whole bunch of CDs, right? And theoretically, I could pop them on my computer and the computer will rip them and even title them correctly, depending on a bunch of factors, including, you know, because any CD that's kind of weird or whatever, it might just decide, oh, yeah, this isn't Thin Lizzy, like Live in Japan.
Right.
This is like the Everly Brothers Christmas TV special. So that sucks. The other thing is, there are a couple of like compilation CDs, like mixtapes, but on CD, that I want to keep as like at least a playlist. The problem is, it's really tough to rip them. And because every time, you know, you put a disc in, it tries to see what that disc is. And I know it's not going to match anything, but it's going to give me a bunch of suggestions. And then do I have to hand type all that IDE information or whatever it's called? Or ID3 or whatever. I don't know. The background data.
I think it's ID4, but well, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
So the Linguini incident is available on YouTube.
Oh, nice. Okay, cool.
1 hour 44.
Perfect. Okay, back to Stargate. Hey, you guys, we're talking about the movie Stargate. Remember that, 1994? This is a song about Alice. Remember Alice? So, Daniel Jackson, James Spader, is this linguist, schlubby, kind of a fish out of water John Lennon type. And he is invited by Catherine, this old lady, to translate some Egyptian hieroglyphs on cover stones from 9,994 years ago, known as casing stones, that her father had unearthed in Giza, Egypt in 1928. Jackson's taken to a U.S. Air Force installation and told by its commander, Special Operations Colonel Jack O'Neill, Kurt Russell, that the project is classified. Now, this actually glosses over a bit because Russell is... maybe has retired from the military and he is taken out of retirement, but they come to his house and take him out of retirement. And he is literally sitting in his son's bedroom with what is purportedly in here, his service revolver, and thinking about killing himself because his son killed himself. Maybe with his service revolver. I don't know.
They never make it clear, but it also,
it's just a snapshot.
I was beyond not.
Well, that's the thing. He's a broken guy. Also, I had a question for you. The fact that Kurt Russell's makeup in general gives him those Egyptian eyes, is that on purpose or does he just have those?
I heard what you were saying, but I didn't see the same thing. So. Okay.
All right.
I can understand how perhaps it would look that way, but it didn't look that way to me. So I don't know if it was just.
Maybe I'm projecting.
Or maybe I'm just not sensitive.
Yeah. Well, let's split the difference. Yeah. I don't know what that means either. So.
I mean, was this a Goldie Hawn choice? I don't know.
Who knows? So anyway, so basically, Kurt Russell gets drugged back into the military, but he's a strict military man. He is stern. He doesn't give a shit, and he also doesn't care if he dies because he's got nothing to live for. His poor wife, though, is probably just happy to see him go. I know here
other kids, right?
I don't know. That's a good question.
I thought there were other kids in the
house. I hope not. That would be sad. But oh well.
I can't. Again, it was incidental. I wasn't paying attention. So.
By the way, one of the researchers in this whole thing is Richard Kind, who is always nice to see. Richard Kind, who we know from Argo, all of the TV. He's got like 250 something. Citations, tons of voice work, tons of TV. I believe he was also George Clooney's roommate who had a cat, and the whole story about Clooney took a dump in the cat box at the end of A Practical Joke.
What?
Do you not know the story?
No.
I will retell it again here. So, okay. So the story is Richard Kind, if I'm remembering it correctly, Richard Kind and George Clooney were roommates like when they were in college or acting school or whatever. Okay. And Richard Kind had a cat. And maybe there are other actors who lived in this, like, more of a communal setting. I don't know. Richard kind of had a cat. And he had to go out of town for some reason and had George Clooney. He's like, yeah, I'll watch your cat. No problem. And so... Okay.
You don't have a letterbox if you kind of have a cat.
Okay. Well, no. He had a cat. Sure he had a cat. In fact, maybe... Okay. Hold on. Maybe his job just kept him... I don't know. The deal was Clooney was going to look after the cat while Richard Kind was off doing stuff, right? And so he must have been periodically back in because Clooney was like very carefully cleaning the cat box like every single day. But he told Richard Kind that the cat didn't go to the bathroom at all, like for a week or something. And of course, there's no poop in the cat litter box. And he's like, is he eating? Oh, yeah, he's eating just fine. I don't know what's going on. It's weird. It's like there's no poop around. I'm a little concerned. And then just prior to the point where Richard Kind would be concerned enough to go to the vet. George Clooney takes a gigantic human dump into the cat box. And so then obviously Richard Kind is saying that, oh, my cat hasn't pooped in a week. And now look, there's this gigantic log in the cat litter box. That's the kind of pranks that George Clooney does to people. So just, you know, I'm sure it was hilarious. Anyway, okay, never mind.
I'm reading the story now.
Okay, did I get any of the facts correct?
Yeah.
It is Richard Kind and George Clooney.
Yes.
And was Kind out of town or something?
He was looking for work, and George Clooney was stuck in an apartment days, apparently.
There
and,
you go.
He was bored as hell, and so he decided that this would be the thing to do.
Oh, so he wasn't tasked to do any of this. So it was even better. He just mysteriously...
And Kind took the cat to the vet who gave the cat medication to poop.
Oh, that's actually mean.
As the cat could go in the first place, it ended up shitting 15 times a day, which inevitably Clooney found himself cleaning up.
Of course. So okay. So yeah. Hoist by your own petard, as it were. Petard? I don't know. Hoist by your own petard.
Quote, "Now, there's this moment when I'm squatted down over a cat box where I'm going, really? Yeah, I would think that's a little light bulb in your head that goes, maybe I've chosen poorly."
Okay. All right. So we haven't even started this movie, really. So we got Colonel Jack, Kurt Russell, and we've got Daniel, who's James Spader, who's the linguist. Colonel Jack's the military guy. And we determined that all this hieroglyphics, in a real kind of ham-fisted but also real quick series of scenes, it's like, oh, well, this means this, and this means this, and this means this, and oh, okay, it's cool. You've unlocked what we've been working for 10,000 years. Boom. It's a Stargate. And it's the whole premise of this whole movie is that the ancient Egyptians were aliens. And Ra, who is the god of the sun or whatever, wasn't like a deity, but it was actually an alien who came back and like enslaved the population or something. And so all these, it kind of feeds on all the, was it Dr. Gene Scott? And
a little bit.
God, all of those other, like, is
Eric
it?
Eric Bell.
Yeah, like Eric Von Demichen, maybe is his name, something like that. Von something. Yeah, all those things about ancient aliens. Actually, isn't the History Channel now called the Alien Ancient Aliens Network? Anyway, so basically, the guy from The Crying Game was an ancient alien I'm not exactly sure what happened between being on Earth and then going away, but there's a gate that takes you from one end of the galaxy to the other. The gate on each side. And so the idea is they're going to send a team over. And the reason they send Daniel over is because he can actually, he can figure out the hieroglyphics on the other side to send them back when they're done.
Or so they think.
They think, yeah. Yeah, it turns out he was a liar. So they use Jackson's coordinates to align the Stargate's metal ring with markings on its outside. It's actually pretty cool. You know, for 1994, it looks fine. And they make a wormhole. And then the team consists of Jackson and O'Neill. And then we got O'Neill's crack military group, including a guy named Riley, a guy named Poro, a guy named Freeman, a guy named Brown, a guy named Ferretti, who's played by French Stewart, who we know from Leaving Las Vegas and the new WKRB.
What?
Yeah, that was French Stewart actually did a lot of like military type roles like on TV. And then was in the new WKRB in Cincinnati.
There was a new one?
Yeah. Well, again, it must have been real great because I don't even remember it.
Wow. And, okay. Was this a reboot with different characters or was this a reboot with the same characters?
Well, he played a guy I'd never heard of before. So I assume I assume it was all different characters. Probably one character that came back or something. Anyway.
So, Les Nessman.
And the other guy, though, we know is Kowalski, who's played by John Deal. And John Deal is one of those character actors that you see his face everywhere. But we have talked about him in Nixon. And then he was in A Time to Kill. It's also a good movie. And he was also in the TV series Miami Vice as Detective Larry Zito.
He's been in tons of stuff.
Oh, yeah. He's been in everything.
Yeah.
He's definitely a soldier.
He was in a different movie.
Yeah, well, that's true. So then
Stewart was in a different movie.
Uh-huh. Well, again, the movie Fran Stewart in was 99% clam free, much like the Clamato that he got his big marketing thing after Third Rock from the Sun is pitching as the national or international spokesman for Clamato, the clam tomato beverage. That they said in their ad, they advertised as a positive thing of being 99% clam free. Don't worry too much about it. It's just a little bit of clam. Anyway.
Oh my God, the 90s were weird.
Yeah. By the way, Third Rock from the Sun is dumb, but it's fun. That actually, to me, is still funny.
Boyfriend Jesse and I have been watching it. He'd never seen it before, obviously, yeah. But I'd seen it a million years ago. I thought it was hilarious then, and I still laugh at it now.
Well, but yeah, of course, we both like Kristen Johnson. Kirsten Johnston. That's a lot.
Yeah, because I talked before about
she's got
autobiography Guts, which is great. It's a great book. But she's hilarious. I love her. But you also have a young Gordon. What's his face?
Lightfoot.
Yes, Gordon Lightfoot. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Croce.
Yeah. JGL.
And Jane Curtin, right?
Yeah. Yeah, oh no, John Lithgow, Jane Curtin, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, turns out, is the most famous, except for John Lithgow, he's a legend. But also, Jane Curtin is amazing. But it also had, was it Wayne Knight from Seinfeld?
I think you're right.
Newman. Yeah, yeah, he was Sally's boyfriend, which is pretty funny. Yeah. It was good stuff.
It's still funny, which is what amazed me. Yeah. I still laugh at it, which that's the mark of a good sitcom, is that it stands. It doesn't need the context of time to be funny. It's just funny because it's funny. And I have no illusion. It is stupid funny. It's not a smart, funny show, but I still laugh at it.
But the premise is lovely. The premise is they are the team of aliens who have beamed down to Earth for reasons I don't remember, but they inhabit
research.
Yeah, well, whatever they it must be they inhabit the bodies of like a typical family sort of, but like Sally is the character who's in Sally is not necessarily a woman, like
right.
So she doesn't understand like how like the difference between men and women and stuff, and so there's all this kind of goofy fish out of water stuff. And Fran Stewart is just hilariously dumb. But turns out I've heard interviews with him and stuff, and he's actually just pretty fun and charming. And he's been in Mom, and I'm watching Ruins of Mom, and he's great in that.
I like him. Yeah. I don't dislike him.
He's a good actor, just not in this.
Yeah. He was just a grin in this. I'm like, what? I don't.
By the way, well, no, we've already gotten way off the rails. So let's just at least finish the plot here. So they go through the Stargate. They see Ra. Everybody gets home, kind of, and then fade to black. So worth it? No, probably not. Okay. Actually, there is one story I want to tell. But anyway, blah, blah, blah. They go through the wormhole. They go into the desert. They have this strange pyramid, so it's kind of like Egypt-y. And they find this whole group of people like building a pyramid. And by the way, the chieftain is Eric Avari, who is like, he has also been in everything. Sadly, his character is always Habib or somebody. I mean, that's, you know, he's playing like a generic Middle Eastern guy, but we do know him from 2001, Planet of the Apes. And of course, Paul Blart Mall Cop. And also a movie that we need to be watching here sometime soon, The Mummy, the Brendan Fraser Mummy. I want to see how that holds up.
Oh, Lord.
Since we had a whole conversation about Brendan Fraser a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Are we going to do Encino Man, too?
We could. I've never seen the movie.
No.
But,
No Pauly Shore.
It could have a wonderful, like, beautiful, like, sense of innocence. Or not. Anyway.
Uh-huh.
So, blah, blah, blah. Jack, the old lady gave Jackson this this raw pendant for luck. That's one she found. Presumably, actually, she robbed it from the grave in 1928 when her father was there robbing the graves of these things. But we're not going to go there. They're aliens, right? We don't care. So the people there, the primitive tribe, sees his Ra thing and think he's a god. So it's a little bit of C-3PO in the Ewoks village for a second. But anyway, so also the chieftain gives his daughter to Daniel, who is much too much of a gentleman to be like, oh, I see what's happening. No, no, no. I'm not going to have sex with you just because you're a gift to me, which, of course, is going to ruin her life if he doesn't. So he's kind of in a tough place there, but they don't really dwell on that. That's just comic relief. And then we have some other budding friendships, like, I guess I didn't really see this, but I'm sure it's the case. The main, like, kid, the spunky kid is, I guess the chief's teenage son and therefore the daughter's brother or whatever. Yes. He's sort of the, his name is Skara, played by, Alexis Cruz. And there's a hilarious scene of like teaching children to smoke, which is kind of funny. But it's hilarious.
Actually wrote down, you could not put that in a movie today.
I don't know. Maybe you could, because it's such a throwback now.
I was waiting for the cloying callback to his dead son.
Yeah, me too. I'm glad they didn't go there, but God knows they might have.
You know, it was probably discarded.
Exactly. Shot it.
So a special edition of this movie was released on Laserdisc in the U.S., which has alternate footage for some scenes and has 9 minutes of additional material.
Ooh, I wonder what that. Well, I know part of it is. Part of it is they tried to shoehorn a little bit more from 1928 about, like, those big, real life Anubis statues and stuff, and mm-hmm. Horus statues in Egypt. Like, those were actually, they were just like frozen in stone because of some weird thing with the Stargate. Anyway, it's fine that it wasn't there, apparently. Blah blah blah. Yeah, turns out as soon as they get through the wormhole, and they realize that, yeah, there's nothing, there are no, like, Daniel thought there would be some translation stones right there by the other Stargate, and there was none. So he's like, oh no, we're fucked. I have no idea what this is. And Kurt Russell's not impressed.
Also, they go through a wormhole, which, fine, whatever. I mean, I appreciate that they were using a wormhole at that point. They didn't just have some, like, I don't know,
like teleporter.
Yeah, whatever. So I appreciate the wormhole as a device, because in theory they actually exist. So
yeah,
I appreciate that callback to science, especially in 1994. But you've gone to a place you've never been before, which is ostensibly, they say, on the other side of the universe. Right?
Yes.
They make a big point about it's they have that stupid little computer voice thing that's supposed to plot where it is on a 2D board, but the 2D board shows that it's halfway. Anyway,
yeah.
But so they're in a new place in an area they don't know, and instead of using a flashlight, they're using chemical combustion lights.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's not.
How is this a smart idea? Like, why was that a choice?
No, yeah. So, well, because they had road flares, they didn't have to requisition special flashlights.
So I guess part of my problem with this movie is there was a lot of choices in this movie where they made weird choices that didn't add anything to the story, and in fact probably detracted from it and weren't paying off as far as effects, because they were showy for no reason. It didn't add anything.
Well, they're actually, I mean, they're, again, we talked before about this is a premise built on cliches and tropes. O'Neill has brought with him, unbeknownst to the rest of his crew, brought an atomic bomb. So he is going to, depending on what they find or whatever, he's going to get everybody back, let everybody back. Daniel will plot the thing back to open the wormhole. They'll go back through, and then he's going to stay behind because he's going to blow the shit out of it so that the wormhole doesn't exist anymore.
And now we've arrived at the fourth protocol.
Yeah, kind of, yes. So, and also this is of course Chekhov's atom bomb. So you know that there will be a countdown at some point. There'll be a nice big red digital letters, or numbers rather, because that's what happens. Yeah. So blah blah blah. So Jackson learns through this whole thing that Ra, is an alien being who had come to Earth during the ancient Egyptian period looking to possess human bodies to extend his own life. Okay, that's what he was doing. Ra enslaved these humans and brought some to his planet through the Stargate to mine the mineral that's used in the alien technology. The humans on Earth revolted, overthrew Ra's overseers, and buried the Stargate to prevent its use. And then blah, blah, blah. So Ra is played by Jay Davidson. And we know Jay Davidson from only one movie, and that's The Crying Game, where he was nominated for an Academy Award. Now, I remember The Crying Game as being a huge cultural thing. Not a bad movie. The first time I ever saw Forrest Whitaker in a movie, I think.
It's got some problems.
Sure.
It was massively overhyped.
Yeah. And of course, it has a twist. So it's like, don't tell the twist.
Right. Well, and it was overhyped because this is such a different movie. And different doesn't make it better.
No, not necessarily, no.
They were all like, this is groundbreaking. Except it wasn't, because it wasn't good.
Well, it wasn't as groundbreaking as we would think now.
Yes.
Because, well, okay, here we go, guys. I'm going to spoil another movie. The Crying Game. Jay Davidson plays the femme fatale who at the end turns out to have a penis, okay? That was shocking. In real life, Jay Davidson was a model who was kind of androgynous, but he himself was like not trans in any way, not a transvestite. He never did drag. He just happened to be a gay guy who looked pretty feminine and, you know, was a like had a pretty kind of feminine sort of mystique to him. So he played that role, again, Academy Award nominated role, right? His one thing, he's like, I'm out. I don't like this at all. This is bullshit or whatever. And they're like, hey, Roland Emmerich wants you to be basically the star or alongside Kurt Russell in this blockbuster summer movie. And he's like, no, I don't want to do it. I'm not an actor. And they said, you know, and so I guess his agent or whatever is like, you know, well, you can't just say no. Like, you know, he's like, okay, fine. I will do it for $1 million. And they're like, okay. He's like, cool. What? So they paid him. Like, he gave them a go fuck off number of $1 million. And they're like, done. Here you go. Here's the check. And so he's like, ah. So I guess he wasn't he had a bunch of demands and stuff, too. Like he had nipple rings. And for some reason, they couldn't show nipple rings. So they had to like work because he refused to take them out. So they they had to kind of wardrobe around it. And really, he doesn't have a lot of screen time in this movie.
No, he's barely in the movie.
So he earned his fucking $1 million.
but he did do some heavy lifting.
Sure. Yeah, he did fine. I mean, again, he's doing a thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there was no big reveal at the end.
Well, he gets killed at the end.
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
He's not coming back for the sequel.
Yeah, no, of course not. But yeah, so I find that kind of hilarious.
Or is he?
Well, who knows? Yeah. So this is the seventh film appearance, I'm told, of Jimon Hanzu. He plays Horus in this movie. Now, we know Jimon Hanzu from Captain Marvel, Guardians of the Galaxy, Furious 7, Gladiator, and Amistad. But he wasn't even credited in this movie as Jimon Hanzu, who's credited as just Jimon.
Thank you, Brother Drew, for allowing us to watch this movie.
Yes, without you. We appreciate it, yes. So Horus is Jimon Hanzu. Anubis is played by a guy named, what is it, Inoue? Is that... No, different movie.
Iko Uwais, what?
Iko Uwais, yes. No, that's Carlos Lachau. Anyway.
Drew's yelling right now.
No, he doesn't. Never mind. So, blah, blah, blah. Ross and soldiers. Soldiers are, again, it's this whole thing where instead of, I think it looks like Anubis and Horus and all those walk like an Egyptian sort of characters, and they have the staves and stuff like they have in the hieroglyphics, or the hieroglyphs, or in the Egyptian mythology, but it's all like lasers and stuff. So it's basically they're dilithium crystal powered. And the basically these the guys are mining the dilithium crystals. And that's how it all works out. And he has to periodically dip himself in some sort of soup to make himself younger. I don't know.
He has a pretty fancy, spiffy looking regeneration chamber.
Yeah, which actually, you know, looks like King Tut's sarcophagus.
Yeah, yeah, that was probably the most intricate, beautiful part of this movie. Although I did really appreciate the Horus and Anubis costumes. I mean, yeah. the costumery for the deities was fantastic.
Well, this,
I would like to see a movie of just them.
Well, and this is where actually the alien parallel comes through, because there's all, it's not H.R. Geiger, but it's definitely, they've got a thing they're working on. And so they mixed the ancient Egyptian with like the modern sci-fi stuff. So a lot of that design is pretty great. I mean, I totally agree with you there.
Yeah, it stands up.
Yeah. And again, practical effects and physical costumes are pretty cool.
And blue eyes. Blue LEDs are big now.
Yeah, well, there we go.
Didn't exist then.
Well, you know, that was another thing where they thought that they didn't look alien enough, so that's where they added the blue eyes in post.
Huh.
Yeah, it's a piece of trivia there. So blah, blah, blah. We end up with Ra's ships, capture some of the soldiers, and they attack the miners and the tribe people that are mining, and the Ra's soldiers end up capturing Jackson and O'Neill, and they bring them before Ra and his guards, who reveal themselves as humanoids in their armor. This is where they have their retracting headpieces, which is pretty cool. And then there's a firefight that breaks out. Jackson's killed, and the others are captured. Ra places Jackson's body in a sarcophagus-like device that regenerates him. Ra then explains to Jackson that he has found a nuclear bomb that O'Neill secretly brought with him, has used his alien technology to increase its explosive power 100-fold, and threatens to send it back through the Stargate. So I've found your ticking time bomb, and, well, it's not ticking yet, and I'm going to pack it with a whole bunch of other stuff and send it back. Fuck you up.
I see your bet and I raise you.
Exactly. So then Ra orders the human tribe to watch as he's going to force Jackson to execute the others to demonstrate his power. But Skara and his friends created a version that allows Jackson, O'Neill, and Kowalski and Ferretti to escape, with Freeman being killed. They flee to nearby caves to hide from Ra. Skara and his friends celebrate again, like Ewoks. And Skara draws out a sign of victory on a wall, which Jackson recognizes as the final symbol, because he needs 7 points to blah, 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 blah.
Now, how does he recognize this as the final symbol, since he didn't know what it was to begin with?
By the way, the symbol that he found to begin with, which was a pyramid with a pyramid with a little circle on top?
Yeah.
You see the symbol that has a pyramid with three circles on top, you realize this planet has three suns. It's like, yeah. Yeah, you could figure that out. Or maybe three moons or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. But subtle this movie wasn't.
No. So now we have a way back. O'Neill and the remaining men and Skara overthrow the remaining overseers and launch an attack on Ra, who himself sends out fighter ships against the humans, blah, blah, blah. And he's going to escape. Sort of like the... God, I can't remember what the name of the ship was in Spaceballs, but the Hoover one. Anyway.
I don't remember either, but...
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about, though, right?
I do.
Yeah, where they have to turn the vacuum from suck to blow or whatever. Anyway.
Yes. Jesus.
That's the thing. For such a bad movie, I still remember that and Pizza the Hut and... Yeah. So... blah, 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 blah. There's this big old fight. The girl, the love interest is killed, but then Jackson ends up taking her body and sneaking her back to the sarcophagus of life juice. And then there's this whole teleportation. Don't dig too deep in that well. There's this whole teleportation rings thing, which is pretty cool. And it actually plays in the last action part of the whole thing, in a kind of a gruesome but fun way. You know, So O'Neill, Kurt Russell, has then set the time bomb to go off no matter what. But luckily, Spader and the gang come back to activate the teleportation system. They kill Anubis, and
pretty gruesomely.
Oh yeah, yeah, it's pretty great. And then so, because they can't stop the bomb, even though Kurt Russell's puts in the code to stop it, he can't stop it. So it's like, oh my god, there's only seconds left. So instead, they use a teleporter to transport the bomb up to Ra's ship, which is again the top of the pyramid that's kind of unscrewing and ready to fly away. So they transport it, which then, as Ra's ship is in space, it blows up, so conveniently leaves them unscathed, and Ra presumably very scathed. And then the remaining team, including French Stewart and John Deal, they return to Earth, and instead of Kurt Russell staying behind, because apparently, by the way, after all of this stuff, Kurt Russell is now free of his child who died of suicide blues. Like he's like, no, I'm good now.
Yeah, after all the pillaging and murder that happens, he's charged up again.
You know what? I'm good. I feel better than ever. Quit smoking. It's great. So instead, Jackson stays behind, and he makes a life with Sari and the others. And again, he just lives in the Ewok village forever as C-3PO. End credits.
Yeah.
So I mentioned before, I don't have it. I wish I had some of the actual review here. Roger Ebert hated this movie. This isn't like the book that he wrote that was like the book of all one-star reviews. He didn't hate it as much as North, which was like...
Was North Bruce Willis?
No, well, I don't know who was in it, but it was a Rob Reiner movie. But Ebert's entire review was, I hated this movie. But no, this thing, he's like, this movie had some potential and it sucked. It made every wrong decision. It talks about it's built on cliches. It's good actors giving bad performances. He makes fun of James Spader's John Lennon glasses, the whole thing. And yeah, he especially didn't like the ticking time bomb at the end.
Elijah Wood, Bruce Willis, and Jason Alexander.
Oh, yeah. Well, there you go.
It was a shit of a movie. It was awful.
Yeah, well.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I don't even have to hear the audio. I'm seeing the preview, and I'm remembering how horrible this movie was. And I've only seen parts of it. So, anyway. So Roger Ebert hated this movie. That's reassuring in the universe.
Yeah.
Let's see what my notes are. I said, oh, of course it's going to be military controlled. Oh, is this whole movie going to be nothing but tropes? Oh, yes, it is. So it's a wormhole bridge. I like that. Chemical lights instead of flashlights. Poor choice. How do they expect to get back home? Sure. Feed a strange animal that you've never met before on a planet you've never been to before chocolate, because that's never been known to be fatal to any creatures on Earth, right?
As you mentioned it, that was not in the plot synopsis, so I had forgotten that whole scene where James Spader basically gets drugged through the entire desert because he fed a strange pack animal.
Snuffle up, I guess.
Yeah, and somewhere between a Jim Henson character and a Bantha from Star Wars.
It actually looks a lot, reminded me a lot of the Dark Crystal.
So. Yes, indeed. But that's all yakety sacks. Oh, yeah, yeah,
yeah. That's why I said this movie was it's just a whipsaw of bipolarity. It wasn't even bipolar. It was omnipolar. It was everywhere.
Bizarre a product placement of the Fifth Avenue bar, right? Which isn't that just kind of like a knockoff Butterfinger or vice versa?
Except I think the Fifth Avenue have, I'm thinking the Take Five. One of them had pretzels in
no,
it.
No, that's Take Five.
All right. Yeah, I don't know what the Fifth Avenue bar was. Did see one of the military guys, and I forgot which one, but he had a 35mm camera. That was jarring.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I wrote, this movie is so slow. This movie is painfully slow. This is a two-hour movie that feels like it's 8 hours long. There's no reason it needs to be this slow. And then I wrote, so it's sci-fi. No. Oh, it's comedy. No, now it's horror. Oh, now it's suspense. Oh, now it's just confused. Let's see. And because his son died, now he's keen on kids. Let's see. Teaching a kid to smoke, that would never go in a movie today, probably.
Yeah.
I wrote, ooh, bitchin' sarcophagus. Oh, here's a question I have. When they're all thrown in jail after they're captured, why are they thrown in a tank of water?
Well, yeah. I don't know. Good question.
But I don't get it. But I don't understand what the significance, the point of, like, I mean, they're in a desert, so water's hard to come by. So we're going to poison our water supply by putting prisoners in there that are going to crap in it.
I do not know.
So anyway, it just really irritates. It was one of those things that I'm just like, this is a stupid plot point.
By the way, Butterfinger introduced in 1923. Uh-huh. Fifth Avenue Bar introduced in 1936. The difference is that the Butterfinger is enrobed in some, it's kind of a chocolatey coating, but the Fifth uh-huh. Avenue is enrobed in more of a traditional chocolate. Fifth Avenue is a Hershey's product, and Butterfingers is a Reese's product. That's all.
There was a joke somewhere I saw that was some kind of religious joke, but it was basically the divine creatures that created cacao are standing over the planet, and they're remarking, like, we gave them cacao to make chocolate on Earth, and they called it a Mars bar. So,
oh, that's sort of hilarious.
I probably butchered that story, but it still makes me laugh.
It's okay. No, you know what? So one time when they were roommates, George Clooney hit a Mars bar in a Jack Kynes litter box. Jack Kynes, Richard Kynes. Oh. Anyway. Oh, dear.
So. Oh, it's so good to go off the rails.
Yeah. Hey, this has been off the rails from the beginning. So I hope you people that listen to it, by the way, treasure you all for sure. This is one of those loosey-goosey episodes. It's been a week.
It had to be, though, because this movie was not good.
No, it wasn't great. You're right. I mean, by tradition, how would you judge this?
This was a D. This was a D movie. This, I can't give it anything above a D. I'll give it a D plus, okay? I'll say D plus. It's almost a C, but it's not good enough to be a C. It wants to be a C really badly. It's trying too hard, though.
Yeah, see, I would give it a C, C plus, just for nostalgia for me.
Nostalgia but doesn't push it over that, but I appreciate
it. It's not great, yeah. But it's just great, fun. I mean, it's basically, it's the equivalent of what, it's the kind of movie that should show, like, on the if we had traditional networks anymore, it would be like a Saturday afternoon movie that just played on TV.
That assumes I even have channels anymore.
Exactly. Nobody has anything anymore. It's fucking nobody. Yeah, it's a whole other thing. Physical shit. Anyway, although if you've got a copy of the Linguini Incident, let us know. Although, what, YouTube, right? We don't need that.
Yeah, I have a 3-month free trial to YouTube Premium, so I'm gonna see what I can do with that.
Nice. So
now I just have that stupid Slap Chop commercial in my head.
Martini Linguini.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. Anyway, I forget that. But yeah, you know, you know what I'm talking about, though. So
yes, oh, I totally know.
Reference made.
We actually have one. I don't think it's called a Slap Chop, but it is just the Slap Chop.
Like the Z Chopper.
Yeah, exactly. Yes,
it's like the V Slicer.
Uh huh. We have a V Slicer too.
I love my V Slicer. Oh, me too. I still use it all the time.
Yeah, just I got the chainmail glove because
I think chainmail gloves are useful. I think mom and dad were shocked when I said, oh, no, I still use it. I still use it all the time.
Me too.
And they're like, I think mom was shocked. She's like, you still have yours? I'm like, of course I do. What do you mean, why I still have it? You gave it to me and it's worked wonders. It's razor sharp. It could take fingers off. Are you kidding?
And does.
Well,
yes. if you need to remove your fingerprints, it's just a 7-step process. Maybe you can do it in 5 steps if you're... You're clever.
Actually, you could do it in 1 step with one hand. I mean, if you're fast enough. Oof.
Yeah, take off your palm print, too. You can deglove yourself.
Sorry, mom and dad.
Yeah. Yeah, is it worth it? I thought it was worth it. It's a fine way to kill 2 hours. It's going a lot of different directions. It's got familiar faces in it. That's all I wanted, really. Not some heavy lifting. Now, next week, we're going to do some heavy lifting when we talk about Spider-Man Homecoming. It apparently is one of the better movies in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Is that next week?
I believe so. Unless next week, Drew and I are talking about Rubicon. Maybe that is what we're doing next week.
Yeah, I don't know. Is Homecoming the next in the series?
Yes. Well, Guardians of the Galaxy 2, then Homecoming, and then I think Thor Ragnarok, and then Black Panther.
Galaxy 2, right?
Yeah, you and Drew already did it. Yeah. Okay. So we might mention it a little bit.
Have you watched it yet?
I have not, no. So I will.
You need to watch it. But
I'll shove it in there before,
I don't have any desire to watch it again, but all right. Okay.
So we have housekeeping?
Sure.
Housekeeping wider than a mile.
It's been a weird couple of weeks. I don't know what has been going on, but, well, stress at work mostly. But so for some reason I got stuck. I don't know why. I have this weird thing about World War II. I ended up stumbling across a movie that The 12th Man.
Okay.
Which is...
is this like a classic movie or is this a...
Well, it came out a couple years ago, 2017, I think? 2017. It's the true story of a bunch of saboteurs during World War II that were Norwegian, Swedish...
Norwegian. Says, after a failed anti-Nazi sabotage mission leaves his 11 comrades dead, Norwegian resistance fighter Jan Bolsrud finds himself fleeing from the Gestapo through the snowbound reaches of Scandinavia.
It was actually pretty good. I thought it was a decent movie. It's subtitled, so you have to pay attention, which is fine. It was a pretty movie. It was difficult to watch, though. It was a rough movie. And the lead actor lost 30 pounds for the role. So
is that Jonathan Rhys-Meyers?
Thomas Gulstad. There's no Americans in this film. So
okay, yeah.
But so it's if you're into World War II movies as a kind of quasi-historical, because kind of like Dunkirk. I liked Dunkirk because it was quasi-historical. This is quasi-historical. It's got some good interesting stuff. So I would give this a recommend. And then I ended up on the National Geographic four series German battles, American German battles that turned the war. And I don't know why I got stuck in that. And that just took up an entire week of my life I didn't need to let go of. But and then I was looking for something to watch, and I got sucked into the Leah Remini Scientology miniseries.
Oh, interesting.
And let me say, I fucking hate Netflix sometimes. I really despise them sometimes.
Because?
Their interface is terrible. And I don't know if it's them specifically or it's Apple TV that has forced them into a certain architecture for their app. But the layout of their app is crap. So I got interested in the Leah Remini thing. And there's three seasons, by the way.
Yeah.
And so I thought, wow, okay. I don't have terrestrial TV, so I missed this, although it's on Annie. I don't have cable TV either, so I missed it. But I was fascinated. I'm like, well, Annie usually does okay stuff. They have Hoarders, which, Guilty Pleasure, I watched that.
Yeah.
And, they had Intervention, which another Guilty Pleasure, I watched that. So I'm not above, really schlocky TV. So, and this is a little on the schlocky side, but so I started watching and I thought, holy shit, this is, first of all, it's terrifying.
Oh, her book is great.
Oh, okay. Well,
because, she grew up in the Sea Org. She was a teenager and when her mom joined Scientology.
Yeah, it's crazy. It is some crazy batshittery that, I knew it was batshittery. I mean, because Tom Cruise is all about it. So that tells me all I need to know. But I just...
Was it Danny Masterson, Tom Cruise, Kirstie Alley?
Sounds about right.
Yeah. Oh, it used to be, what's her name? Laura Prepon. but she has since renounced it.
It's just goofy. Anyway, so I'm watching this, and it was intense. And some of these episodes are intense. And I think I told I was Drew Mayo. I was talking to you last week. One of the guys in it, Mark Rinder, who was like one of the big guys at Scientology, mm-hmm. who has now come to denounce it, and he's working with Leah to kind of be like, oh no, I absolutely did that terrible thing.
Yeah.
Like I did it. Like I feel bad about it, and I'm an awful human being, and I'm just trying to make up for that. But he has this weird Australian American, Southern American accent that is really kind of discordant. So I recommend looking up some of his audio.
Okay.
Looking up some clips, because it is just bizarre. Also, a lot of Australians in Scientology, which is odd. But my whole point to this was I was bitching about Netflix, so I'm bring around back circle. So I'm watching, like, I watched, like, and Jesse was getting really irritated at this point because, like, I want to watch something else. I'm like, okay, we'll watch Star Trek for you. We'll go back to Deep Space Nine. I'm sorry. I'll just watch this when you're not home. I know it's my crazyville, so it's fine. I don't expect anybody to watch it with me. And then I realized, because of the way Netflix has their stupid interface laid out, I have seen most of the third season because it's at the top of the fucking list.
Oh, okay. So you'll actually be going back.
Well, I immediately stopped and went back and started watching season one.
But season one is a lot less guests, right? If I remember correctly. Because like she got much more cooperation after people had a positive reaction to her show.
Had some guests, but she also had a couple episodes where it was just the audience asking her questions, like sending in Reddit, ask me anything. Which, again, they had some really good questions that were like, ooh, yeah, no, Mike Rinder, like, oh no, I'm not proud, but yes, I did that.
Well, and it's actually you don't want to understate the fact that this was actually kind of a courageous move on her part, because they were so litigious, and they also had, I can't remember what it was called, but it's like if you were an SP. Suppressive person or whatever it's called. If you were considered to be like outside their group or whatever, they didn't consider any, there was any rules against ruining your life. Like they could do anything they wanted to you because you weren't a real person.
Well, and the noisy, they call it noisy something. They're noisy about their surveillance. Noisy surveillance, I think, is what they call it. They deliberately are obvious and terrible when they're surveilling you.
Oh, yeah. And they show up places, and they'll also...
And they say false things. And
yeah, they'll try to ruin you in every single way.
Yes.
They'll ruin your family. They'll ruin your professional. They'll ruin your whole name. They'll ruin your loved ones.
Yes. Yeah, they have no rules.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not really what you want in a church, I would think, but okay. I mean, whatever.
It cuts down on the bitching.
I suppose. So just watching this, it is very culty. So, okay. That's a thing. But I think the craziness of it and their tactics where they lie about everything. Like if they don't ever accept the premise that what they believe is wrong. And if you're saying something that is against them, you by default are wrong. And so they never accept anything but success. They never accept the premise that they could fail or that they've done something wrong, which is why I made the point to you. I'm like, is Trump a Scientologist? Because he certainly fits the mold. He certainly spouts the same rhetoric. He certainly has the same tactics. And so maybe they're just predatory tactics in general, and that's why they seem familiar. But I was thinking about this today. I was just fascinated because, Scientology apparently is just a big landowner because that's how they hide all their money, because they're nonprofit and they can't have assets per se. They can't have a lot of income with no outgo, or the IRS wouldn't see them as a charity, nonprofit church.
Well, church, yeah. It's a religious organization, yeah. Oh, no, right. But there's, let me tell you, plenty of churches are money-making institutions.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
big business.
Joel Osteen, right, or whatever. Yeah, who had, Joel said, Osteen. Yeah, no, I have Bob Tilton, right?
Dr. Jerry Prevo.
I was going to go there, but so anyway, I've been fascinated by this show. It's interesting to see the people. It's terrible to hear the stories of some of these people, and I know people are like, well, it's a TV show, it's sensational. I'm like, it doesn't matter how sensational it is, if any of this is true, I can't quantify how awful it is.
Oh no, it's bad. And like I said, there have been several books recently, including Lee Remini's, about, you know, that have, because before anybody that would start to talk, well, okay, you know the story of the Cult Awareness Network, right?
No.
Okay, so a short version of the story. So Richard Kind and George Clooney are roommates. In the 70s, there was all these like cults and stuff, right? And so there was a group called the Cult Awareness Network that was, their job was basically parents of their college students that went off and joined the Hare Krishnas or the family, the David Berg family or whatever, all these other cults, right? Scientology, whatever. They said these cults brainwashed their kids, so they would hire deprogrammers to go in and basically kidnap the adults, even though they were, you know, it was the parents that were going after them. These were, for the most part, over 18 full adults who then were literally thrown in the back of trunks and stuff, driven away, and then subjected to some deprogramming things, which were probably very, very questionable as far as, like, ethics and mental health and whatever. But so to combat that, though, the Church of Scientology like sued the shit out of them and got the right to use Cult Awareness Network's name. And actually, maybe I'm conflating two stories, because you know what? Narcotics Anonymous is also a Scientology thing. It's nothing to do with Alcoholics Anonymous. It's everything to do with Scientology.
Yes.
Yeah. And again, I don't particularly want to be the victim of a Scientologist lawsuit. So, you know, whatever. You guys do what you want. But
no, I mean, it's working for somebody. Yeah, I mean, yeah. they're a huge institution. So
yeah. Allegedly, they're big pieces of shit. So.
Yeah.
So they can allegedly go fuck themselves.
It's just been a fascinating journey, because I couldn't identify. I don't know that I've ever watched Leah Remini in anything.
King of Queens?
So, no.
Saved by the Bell?
No. So she's never been in my wheelhouse, but she's pretty compelling.
Oh, yeah.
She's got some crazy, too, though. I mean, sure. She's not above the crazy, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's...
She grew up in a cult and then worked in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Actually, as a member of the cult, so it's all very complicated.
Yeah, so that's been fascinating. It's been an interesting kind of... It's just been weird. It's been a weird week, so... Weird couple weeks, so...
So, thanks to listener Mike... listener Michael. He strongly recommended the Audible.com audio dramas of the Alien series, right?
I actually have listened to them.
Okay. So there are three of them. I mean, there's a bunch of Alien novelizations and books in the Alien universe, as it turns out. But
these are actual, like, shows.
Yeah, yeah. They're actual multicast recordings.
Ensemble.
Yeah. The first one has Rutger Hauer. The second one has Rutger Hauer still, but also Anna Friel. And the third one has Stockard Channing.
Yeah.
And so last weekend, I listened to all three of them. And the first two take place between the movie Alien and the movie Aliens in the timeline. In fact, the second one actually goes right, like, introduces the movie Aliens pretty much. So that inspired me to watch the movie Aliens again, by the way, which is interesting. And then the third one takes place well after Aliens. And they were all very sort of cinematic feeling. Like, they weren't as deep as an audiobook would be, but there was a lot of cool special effects and stuff. So it kind of made it feel like you were watching an action, you know, like listening to an action movie. Mm-hmm. And the actress who played the Sigourney Weaver, the Ripley role, sounded great. Sounded a yeah. lot like Sigourney Weaver. And Rutger Hauer is the like the computer, the AI that was evil, mm-hmm. was great. So, and then Stalker Channing is always good and everything. So, yeah, so I dove through those. They're about, what, 5 hours a piece, something. So
sounds about right.
Yeah. So it turns out, they are all available. If you have an Audible membership, like a monthly membership, whatever enables you to get to Audible Plus, which means that there's thousands of books that are available for free on Audible Plus. And,
I think you just have to have a subscription to them, a recurring subscription.
Yeah, any kind of monthly subscription.
Silver or gold or platinum, yeah. or because they have different plans. But so, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I recommend them. I've listened to them.
Oh, yeah. They're good. And again, it's the Alien franchise has never been my favorite. Like the Alien, like the H.R. Giger or Geiger, whatever you pronounce his name, his crazy, like, sex robot style is super cool and creepy, and the first movie is a solid sci-fi horror movie. The second movie is like a sci-fi action movie that has the creepy elements, but it's not nearly as horrifying. And so that's it's interesting. Plus, it reminds me how much I like Bill Paxton. And how goofy young Bill Paxton is. His character is goofy. He's kind of over the top. But he still fits, you know, he's not dramatically different than anybody else in the movie. Also, it was maybe the first non-comedic role I'd seen Paul Reiser do. Because that was a big thing. And he was great as sort of the bad guy. Spoiler. Yeah. So I recommend that. What else? I've been listening to other stuff on Audible Plus. Because I found myself, first of all, especially the first of the Alien things called Out of Shadows, maybe, I probably listened to it. It was divided into chapters like a podcast, and I maybe listened to chapter 3 and 4, like, 4 times because I would be falling asleep, and then I'd wake up and I'd be on chapter 7 and have to go back to chapter 3 and listen to the last half of chapter 3 and then keep going, because it would be what I listened to as I'm going to bed. But still, very enjoyable.
Yeah, I think that in the beginning of the Audible, the new Audible, they just had, like, you could pick 2 picks every month. They had, and then now they've changed. But I got the Alien stories as, like, they were the, so I would go through, because every month they would have a couple of them, and I was like, I would pick the least of the two evils, because most of it was...
Because they offered you, like, 12 books, and you could have 2 of them forever.
Right. But most of them was like, well, I'm never going to listen to that, and I don't want... That's like a young adult thing, which I have no interest in.
Two young adults.
That's a romance novel. Kid.
Yeah, 2 romances.
This is a Chuck Tingle book, and I'm not interested in that, so...
Yes. Historical fiction. It's like, no. You know, or, you know, the memoir of an artist I don't care about. Like,
So I think that's how I accumulated them. But I listened. So because you could only listen to them for, I think, that month, and then they just appeared out of your library. So
if I remember correctly, if you had to select the ones you got to keep, but you had to keep them forever.
They're
in your library forever, but had to select them before the end of the month.
Yeah, so I think I downloaded them as they were available because they were because they were sci-fi-ish, and I figured the reason I can't watch the movies is because they scare me, but the books would scare me, but at least it wasn't I could put my own visual in it, which means I could change the visual in my head. So I think that made it a little more manageable for me. So, but they're good. So
it's funny. Here, spoilers. I have never listened to as many main characters killing themselves, like, on purpose as I did during those three dramas. Turns out, when you're fighting the aliens, you know, maybe you're not going to win. Like, there is a point where it's like, oh no, this is over. So time to eat my gun.
Yeah. Speaking of Audible, let's see what I'm listening to that.
Chuck Tingle.
I tried listening to that Yes We Mustard thing, and I just
I understand. I totally understand.
Because
the whole thing is like a satire about working for a tech company that's also full of shit.
It's like, I know these people.
Yeah.
I have dealt with these people. I'm like, it's the same reason I can't watch The Office.
Because too cringy.
It was like, oh, this is like being at work. I can't watch this. This is just like being at work at my old job. Not my current job, but it was just like being back in my old job. And I'm like, oh no, I don't want to feel this. This isn't funny for me. I mean, maybe in 20 years it'll be funny, but it's not funny right now.
Yeah.
This is just giving me post-traumatic flashbacks. Let's see, some of the books that I've finished recently. The Mars Rover Curiosity. That was interesting.
Cool.
Stephen Tobolowsky's Cautionary Tales. That was kind of interesting. Let's see. What else have I finished? That's up next.
I've actually podcaster and one of my favorite comedians, Jimmy Pardo, despite himself, actually highly recommends the Colin Jost memoir.
Oh, okay.
It is laugh out loud funny on like every page.
Okay. I'll look for that. Afraid of the Dark, which is a true crime murder story. Driving the Saudis, which was kind of a fascinating memoir.
Was that with Morgan Freeman and Jessica Tandy?
No. But it was an interesting book. It was a little it was a hard listen, but it was very insightful.
What's it about?
It's about an American actress. It's a true story. She wrote it herself. It's her memoir. But a struggling American actress who, on the side, makes money as like a limo driver. And she got a job where she was driving members of the Saudis around for like a summer.
A female?
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
And so she has a very interesting perspective because she's treated very differently.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So. It's kind of fascinating. It was kind of a fascinating insight because I found it quite interesting. I tore through Call the Nurse, which is a strange story about a nurse who moved to this rural Scottish island. Maybe I don't remember. Anyway, it was fun. Let's see, Melissa Anderson's book, autobiography,
from Little House on the Prairie.
Uh huh.
You know, I hear.
Talks about Michael Landon being kind of a bastard.
Yeah, I hear Nellie Olson, that actress, her book is great too.
I'll have to look. But Melissa Anderson was like, yeah, there's a reason that the end of the series, like they have the one of the last episodes is like the whole town burns down.
Okay.
That's because Michael Landon was like, nobody's going to fucking use our sets. We're not leaving them behind. Everything gets burned down to the ground.
Oh my God. Wow.
I was like, okay. Wow. Okay. All right. Let's see. I just finished A Very English Scandal, which was fascinating.
What's that?
It's one? About like, I want to say it's about a 40s and 50s parliament.
Yes.
Minister of parliament.
Joanna. It's a movie Jeremy called Thorpe. Scandal with Joanna Whalley, eventually Joanna Whalley Kilmer. And Bridget Fonda, maybe?
Oh.
Yeah, if I remember correctly.
So
great, fun movie.
Jeremy Thorpe, politician, minister of parliament, who was gay but then he had a relationship with a guy, and the guy was kind of a little mentally unstable, but... he kind of messed the guy around and tried to have the guy killed.
Oh, hold on. Maybe I'm thinking of a different movie, scandal then.
But anyway, it was a fascinating book. It was crazy. I mean, just crazy. And now I'm listening to a book that's about, that's titled 9/12, which you can imagine is about the fallout from the World Trade Center disaster.
What do you think about...
So I've been tearing through the books lately.
Yeah, okay. So this is different. This is Stephen Ward, John Hurt, regularly employs attractive young women as professional party guests to impress his influential friends in the British government. One of these women has affairs with both Britain's Minister of War and a supposed spy for the Soviet Union. And when the affairs are made public, the resulting scandal costs many people their careers. So this is a whole different scandal.
Yeah.
Okay. Well. Okay, it's why I like Joanna Wally Comer. Yeah, John Hurt, Joanna Wally Comer, Ian McKellen, Bridget Fonda, Britt Eklund. Yeah, it's got everybody. Okay.
So, did you have a question? Were you forming a question somewhere?
It's always turning into a question. You know me. I was excited when on a tangent that had nothing to do with your topic. I interrupted really.
All right. Well, that's fine. I'm used to that.
Yeah. I can say it's nothing new. I was telling my trainee about you today, and I can't remember. Well, because we ran across a car that was owned by somebody that lived in Sandy, Oregon.
Oh,
I'm really? Like, hey. Yeah. But somehow you came up another way, and it was just one of those things where that's my brother Jason. He's something of a force of nature. Like, you don't want to get on Jason's bad side.
Well, I'm a little slower these days, but I appreciate that.
Well, I think you're probably still pretty good at taking care of business. So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're going to leave it right here. Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're going to leave it right here. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies, they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's a brother Sanderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away unless you're driving. Keep them open in that case. We got Aaron, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you two, not in a creepy way. Hey, not in a creepy way.